You know, I have to admit, I feel so stupid. You know, for the last few years, I've been thinking that the homelessness in Los Angeles was a problem, a crisis, a disgrace, something that we're all working towards improving, removing, helping people, lessening, maybe even making go away. And, you know, I drove around, particularly this week, and noticed that the homeless encampment on Robertson was moved to, you know, a side street, and this one was moved there. And I've come to realize, and I did some research on it, that I'm totally wrong. This is the new growth industry of Los Angeles. In a city and a state where we're chasing out tax-generating businesses like movie production, TV production, restaurants shutting down, Los Angeles in particular and the state have come up with a new industry to create jobs and, more importantly, campaign contributions and money for politicians. The new growth industry, particularly in Los Angeles, is the homelessness industry. I'm going to show you why, unfortunately, how that works out. Before I get into that, I'm Bill Gross. This is my real estate weekly update. I get together every week and put together overview of the marketplace as well as the news of the week. And I am at Bill Gross Probate on social media. Always before we start talking about the details, we want to reframe where the market is and look at the stats. In an economy, you have two factors. You have demand and supply. Demand in real estate is set by interest rates. Supply is measured by the inventory of homes for sale. Let's take a look at those two key stats. We'll see your interest rates, unfortunately, have jumped up here in the last few weeks. And we were below 7 for a while and then jumped above it about a week and a half ago and stayed above it, closing at 7.44 for the week. Now, obviously, halfway to 8, still in the 7s, above out of the 6s. This is not high enough to stop the market, but it is enough to cool it off a bit. It's another negative factor in the marketplace that may cause things to cool off and definitely is worth watching going forward. Now, that determines how many buyers there are in the market. Well, how about on the seller side? What determines the seller's interest in the marketplace? That would be measured by inventory. Let's take a look at that. You can see here that inventory today is just above last year. We have 493 homes for sale versus 457 a year ago, slightly higher. The only years it's higher than are the pandemic years. And you can see that all this is well below the pre-pandemic years of 2018 and 19. So by historical standards, even with an increased population, we have less homes for sale than any other time other than during the pandemic, other than last year. And even there, it's very close. So overall, inventory remains very tight. And one of the key factors is housing prices cannot decline unless there's more houses than there are buyers. When there's more houses than there's buyers, then sellers can raise prices and that, I'm sorry, will lower prices to get attention, and that will cause a downward pressure of prices. We're not there yet. In fact, now using trailing data, look at the Los Angeles market, Altos Research, a great service. They raised their market to a 42, which is a little more of a seller's market in the 41 or 40 of the last few months. And so they're saying that based on the statistics, the market has tightened. That's why rates have gone up, because the economy, according to the bankers, is too good, as if there's such a thing. Just shows you how despicable bankers and politicians are. The economy is too good, and that causes rates to go up and cause harm in our economy. But at least locally, the market still is more of a seller's market than a buyer's market. And as long as that continues, housing prices can't go down. That doesn't necessarily mean you should buy homes speculatively, but it does mean that you should feel comfortable, I think, buying a house if it makes sense for you, given the current numbers. See, in the news this week, under despicable corporate figures, one of the most despicable, I think, is Jamie Dimon. This is a guy who runs the largest bank or one of the largest banks in the world, destroying small and local banks as they make a conglomerate, using powerful political connections and bribes to politicians along the way to do that. He basically is an attorney who's made a career out of helping buy up and destroy banks along the way. And just this year, he totaled out his stock sales for JP Morgan, $183 million. Now, I have no problem with an entrepreneur or business person making money because they create good value or services in the marketplace. This guy makes a living by taking your tax dollars and all the rest of ours and going to Washington and getting our politicians to agree to let him gamble them. And of course, when it wins, he wins, hence $183 million. And when it loses, like all politicians, they just hand us back the bill and say, hey, sorry, that didn't work out, and we'll try something different. So Jamie Dimon, I think, is among the most despicable individual people in our corporate America today. Speaking of despicable companies, another one, Zillow. Now, Zillow is the largest company in real estate by market cap by far. They're the big elephant in the jungle that steps on all the small entrepreneurs and help gobble up other advertisers and marketing companies. And so they came out, and this is a perfect insight into their fake marketing model, showcase listings, which is one of their products, on Zillow are more than just cutting edge. Future homes sell faster and for more money. And you think, wow, that sounds good. You know, you're in Yahoo Finance. So they're legitimate, aren't they? Yahoo Finance? No. I'll show you why. And all that, well, that makes sense, doesn't it? Well, yeah, but it's not true. And so this is where they take the lie and they spread it three levels deep so nobody's responsible. So let's tear this apart. First off, Yahoo Finance is merely rerunning an article from PR Newswire. So Zillow writes the article, posts it in PR Newswire. PR Newswire then sends it in a way that Yahoo goes, oh, we'll run anything. It sounds interesting. Please send it to us and we'll run this nonsense in our website because we're in the business of selling nonsense to get clickbait. And so you'll notice this little logo here, Cision, C-I-S-I-O-N, multiple colors. Hard to read, hard to see, may not notice it. What that means is Yahoo's saying to us, this might be complete BS. We're being paid to run this. It's not news. We don't stand behind it. That's what that little teeny logo that nobody knows what it means. Nobody really sees that that's what that means. So you have Zillow now able to take, you know, really what I'm going to show you is fake information. And as a result, turn it into a marketing powerhouse that gets echo chambered and echo chambered and echoed throughout. So how can I say that? So if you read the article in the detail, you'll notice that they reference showcase homes are 20% more likely to secure and accept the offer within 14 days compared to similar typical homes listed in Zillow. And there's a footnote. Now, normally when you see a footnote, that means, hey, it's a fact. We got it from an authoritative source. Who is the footnote? Well, when you hit this, go to the bottom, you'll notice the footnote is in Zillow's own article. Where is it here? Here you go. All claims based on Zillow available here. So what I did was I clicked on that. And they're such liars. So it says they're 20% more likely to go pending, but all their documentation is they took the claim is based on Zillow data analyzed in showcase markets with at least one for sale by owner agent, one for sale by agent listing during the initial 14-day period in those markets. So treatment was active. And what they did was they compared an agent's listing on showcase versus the same agent's listing not on showcase. They compared the listings that you put on that you pay advertising for versus those that you don't. So let me help you here. If you're a real estate agent, let's say you have two listings. One's ready to go, it's clean, seller's motivated, property's showable, they're empty, they're moved out or whatever. It's available for open houses, A. And then B, you have a property that's not quite really ready, the seller's a little less motivated, maybe there's a tenant in there that's getting out in a couple weeks. Which of those two do you pay money for to advertise to get people to go see? Of course, the one that's otherwise ready to go and going to sell more and faster and in better condition. And so all Zillow does is they take their customers who cherry pick, you know, with good reason, those listings that are going to sell, and they put those in the market. But Zillow pretends as though that science, which is telling them that the reason why they're selling is because they're in Zillow's program, which is obviously not the case. So bad on Zillow, bad on Yahoo Finance. The whole thing is just, it's like a lie three levels deep. At the end of the day, there's no data showing the showcase on Zillow. If that was the case, everybody would market on Zillow. And the reason they don't is because the data is not true. Again, when you have to lie about something or market it, it's probably not true. If it was true, every real estate agent would market every listing and showcase because they would sell 20% faster and for 10% more. Who wouldn't do that? Okay, so when I would say the fake news is bad, we're actually training the next generation. And I'm going to play here. For those of you who have kids or grandkids, you might know who Bluey is. Now, Bluey is a kid show. And I would say even Bluey is in the business of putting down our real estate industry and fake information. Let's take a look and see if you guys, if I can make this work. I hope this does work, that we get the audio as well. I'm going to play this. This is the last episode of the season for Bluey. And then I'll tee it up here. The family sold their house. They've moved out. The kids are in the car and they're getting ready to go out. Here's the father closing the door. The kids are in the car. Well, couple things. Obviously, we don't throw trash. Second, we can't just cancel a real estate transaction in the 11th hour. There's legal liability. We all have regrets. I think that teaching kids that just because you're sad, you can change your contract, I think that's a very dangerous lesson. I think it's a very poor way to treat children. I also think it's very frivolous. You know, moving, having moved as a child a few times, it's very traumatic. Each time my family moved, though, we were moving to nicer houses in nicer neighborhoods, bigger houses as we had more kids. It was tough, and I hated it each time, but eventually liked it. Like everything in life, the price of moving was the pain, and the pleasure and the long-term pleasure was the nicer house, the bigger house, the better neighborhood. And so I just take the message, and I, you know, forgive me if I make too much out of a stupid kids program that I would never watch. But I do want to say that I think it reflects poorly that we teach kids just top to bottom such bad information. And this is a very popular show amongst kids. Okay, back to the adults. Under affordability of housing, if you want to say, well, in Los Angeles, gee, it sounds like the politicians are really worried about helping solve the problem. Absolutely not true. You can see nationwide, the number of multifamily units, apartments being built, is about the same over, is lower than it was last year and year before going forward. So we have a big reduction in overall apartments. But one of the things that was fascinating to me was by city, in Los Angeles and New York, the two largest cities in America, LA Metro is only to build 42,000 more apartments in the next 5 years. We have over 43,000 homeless, I think 60,000 homeless. And so we're only building 42,000 apartments in the next 5 years. That doesn't count apartments that burn down or are old or taken out of line. In some cases, to build the new ones. we're the second largest city. Look how far down the list we are as far as apartments. And New York, Manhattan, even worse, only 27,000. And so I think the point I want to make from this graph, which is obvious, is that the housing affordability is not some sort of unexplained crisis that can't be explained where it came from. It is a designed policy by our policymakers that over the next 5 years is going to get worse in Los Angeles, worse in New York, worse in most major cities, because for some reason the politicians want to push us all into government-owned properties, or I'm not really sure what, have less people. I'm not quite sure how we both let more people in the country at the same time don't allow the building of more housing, but that's going to keep the prices of housing going up. Notice about evictions, a fascinating story I wanted to share with you guys. One time, the largest apartment building in the West United States was on West Barrington. It was 700 units. And now the owner wants to follow the law and be able to displace the tenants, upgrade the property, and then they can get more rent. They've owned this property since 1962. So we're talking over 60 years, 62 years or so. And after 62 years, you can imagine the building is, obviously dilapidated, but it's certainly worn down from where it was. And I'm trying to look for pictures of the building. I don't have any handy because the way this video kind of runs. But anyhow, the point of all that is to say that we have a law called the Ellis Act that allows us to have owners redo the properties as long as they redo the whole thing, and they have to be before a certain age, and we have all these regulations and such. And even though this developer is playing by those rules, of course, the tenants still don't care. There's a picture of the property. Let me just get that in. I'll go back a second here. There's a picture of the property. Huge project. And of course, we have tenants who don't want to move out of the property. Understandable. They're paying rent control rates, so they don't want to lose the opportunity to pay below market rents. But the law allows the owner of the building. And of course, the owner of the building isn't always just some faceless billionaire who's evil. It's often money that's invested, our retirement, our pensions, our investments. And so here we have a law, but even when we have a law that allows for the proper redevelopment of rental properties, we have a political class unwilling to allow us to go through and actually take advantage of that opportunity. And so it's just another, I think, example of why our system in Los Angeles is broken, because we follow laws that are pro-tenant. We don't follow laws that are pro-owner. Here's another story on the subject. The housing situation is so bad in Los Angeles, the homeless, that the state has lost $24 billion it spent on homelessness. Can't find out why. The city of LA is spending $2.1 million to audit its share and see where the money went. They have no idea. And so what do we do? Well, Mayor Karen Bass is fighting for us. She calls it LA's most fortunate to help create more affordable housing. She says, all we need is those homeowners, those rich people in LA who are left, who haven't yet left, haven't yet been chased out by their businesses being destroyed and by the tax rates. They should donate money to help the city build more houses. So what she's basically saying is, rather than help people build property, rather than help people build property they would rent out or sell to Los Angelinos, the only answer the city says is, we're going to take as much we can from taxes as we can, and with what's left over, would you consider donating it to us? Because what? She's such a good steward of the money? I just think it's just ridiculous. It's an insight into, I think, the complete craziness of our politicians. They actually would believe that people with money who pay taxes and run businesses would just write her a check because she's going to somehow build the housing that's going to solve the problem. Speaking of building housing, here's a guy who didn't take no for an answer. This story got really national notice on how things are broken in Los Angeles, really becoming the joke in the country. The New York Post reports a story of a guy who, right next to the freeway, just built his own house. And this house has a garden, it has a barbecue, it has working electricity. And so it's not just like your thing on the side anymore. We actually have you look at it, it looks like a house. Now, I don't know how long it would take to build a house with a garden and electricity and a barbecue. I imagine days. Nobody stopped the guy while he's building it right there. Theoretically, if the fire is there, that'd be dangerous for cars going by. Theoretically, it's some sort of emergency access road, or it could be a park that people ride their bikes on. But no, this guy is just building his house there. And I think we're seeing this increasingly, that our city is just not enforcing the laws, and therefore we have people taking public property for their own good, and maybe out of desperation. I can sympathize to some degree, but at the end of the day, that's no way to run a city. It's no way to run a long-term success story. Continuing on the homelessness problem, which is really becoming an industry now. And so here's the beginning of digging deeper in your pockets. Here's a story. Homeless people need more than a house. They need something money can't buy. And so we have this article by Matthew Barnett. It's an opinion piece. He is a pastor, but he's the type of pastor. There's two types of pastors. There are those that are focused on the spiritual needs of their congregants, and there are the ones who are really political pawns. They get their power by making sure their spiritual program aligns with the powerful politicians. And here's a guy who does that. They end up becoming a nonprofit that gets grants and programs from taxpayers to build programs that never do the job. And they're never as effective as those old little churches and pastors who raise money on their own for their congregants and help people. This is the type of pastor who thinks the solution is always the government and really wants his congregants to worship the government rather than God. Because the solution, he's saying, is that as a clergy, he needs to get with the city and the state, which are failing and the source of the problem. And he's saying that we need to work with them. And more than that now, not just build housing, we need to give them food. We have to have money for social programs, not spiritual programs, social programs. And so we've done this, nonstop. But again, this is just saying the bar higher. Politicians are going to tell you they can't just build houses. The problem is holistic. and more detailed. And this is another way to get deeper. Another way they're going to get deeper into our pockets is we have a federal court decision now. And one of these nonprofits in LA took our city to court. The federal judge says that the LA officials, when they threw out what we would call trash on the streets, right? You would look at this and say, wow, this is a trash. It's a health hazard. It's blocking the sidewalk. It's denying our kids walking to school. It's denying our ability to enjoy the city that we pay for. Well, the judge said that that's their personal property, but it's also their records. In the case of them being removed, they're being cited for violating law. And the judge says, you know, really, all that junk isn't junk. That's their proof. And when you throw it away, there's no record of it. Now, the judge didn't say you can video it or take photos of it. He's telling the city that when we now remove somebody from the street, we need to save their stuff for some period of time, I guess, and allow them 30 days or so to access it. So we're going to create a new industry that's going to store their stuff. And these judges are going to, I'm sure, say you didn't save enough. You moved it too roughly. You broke things. You didn't organize it properly. Just another never-ending way for one judge to change the policy here in our country. And we're going to end up with spending more money. Speaking of spending more money on the issue of homelessness, LA's in hot water because we've wasted money. Statewide, we've wasted $24 billion. You have no idea where it is. And so another federal judge here in L.A., when trying to solve the problem, says that L.A. needs to provide an audit as to where the money went. Now, it's fascinating. In America, we don't audit our government. We don't audit the federal government. We don't audit the Department of Defense. Last month, they admitted they've lost $800 billion. We have no audit. You know, we spent $60 billion to Ukraine this week. We have no idea where the money's gone to date. There's no record of it. There's no report that shows where money goes. And so here you have a judge, maybe fairly, and you would think with all the city employees, somebody's job would be to audit these expenditures, provide records, provide proof where the money goes. Of course, there's nobody. The money just disappears because it goes in the hands of donors and political advocates and so on. So here this judge is now forcing a $2.1 million audit, which I don't know if that's good news or bad news. Are we going to actually find the results, or is this another $2.2 million wasted as we try to figure out what's happening with the money that we're spending on the homelessness? And the answer is going to be we're never going to find out why. It's going to be like all the other spending government. We're never going to know where. Why is that? Well, I'm going to show you the industry. And I came across this news bit this week. The industry that's created for the homelessness. Now, this is from a foreign source, not from an American source, The Guardian, which is in the UK, revealed how companies made $100 million clearing California homeless camps. So, you know, I thought, and I was on the neighborhood council, at one point we had, city employees, sanitation employees who would have to clean up. And some of these people make a lot of money. I mean, there's sanitation employees who make, you know, $100,000 or more when you count in their benefits and such. But now we actually have contractors that get paid lots of money to do this. And these are the same contractors that, you know, clean up spills and sewage spills and hazmat stuff and all kinds of other issues of major industrial companies now. And so we see the government spending is going up and up and up. And so this is now one of the growth industries in Los Angeles is cleaning all this stuff up. In fact, I was really interested to look up one of the companies because you kind of tell who people are by their websites and their and the way they do business. And so I went to one of the largest companies, which is ocean-blue.com. And it was interesting that they have this rotating video of their different jobs. They cater to municipal clientele, they deal with tanker overturns, they deal with all kinds of other things. When you go to their services, I found it interesting that other services, the second one, you know, in marketing, you'd put your first one here. So their main business, emergency response. But of all the things they do, and they do six different services, number two is homeless encampments. That's how big that business is, and I'm sure profitable. And so you see these messes. These are the company you call in to clean up that particular mess. $100 million. Now, here's the thing I'm going to tell you. I don't know this, but I'm sure it works out that way, that this company, I am sure, pays lobbyists. I'm sure they give campaign contributions. I'm sure that they hire children and friends of politicians. That's how municipal companies work. That's just their business model. That's their format. And I wanted to also show the cities. It's so interesting that their website is done by Squarespace. I just kind of find it interestingly modest for a company that makes the kind of money they make. But elsewhere on the services, I showed all the different cities that they do business in. It was fascinating to me, the breadth of their services and how industrial they are with these big trucks. I guess it should be. I mean, the kind of things that they do. But they had a list of all their cities that they do business in that included L.A., Long Beach, Covina, Pico Rivera, Redondo Beach. So this is a huge company, and this has now become a big corporate business of cleaning up our homeless. That's not done. You know, we have a bunch of city employees. They're not doing this. We now contract out. How much do we spend? Nobody knows. These people pay off politicians. I don't know. I bet they do. If you ask me to guess, I did some research. I'm not really a journalist, but I'm sure they do. That's how all companies in Los Angeles end up with contracts. That's how all companies in the city of Los Angeles and the state of California end up with contracts, is by making sure that there's grease on the skids to help them get the job through quickly. And so what's the answer? Well, I would say the answer always is holding politicians accountable. We have elections coming up. Vote to hold accountable the people who are doing a bad job. One of those people, I think, is our governor, Gavin Newsom. And while I don't know that we'll ever actually get him out, I think, you know, the people who control the state are the ones who count the votes, not the ones who actually vote. But I still think that we should do our best. There's been a petition qualified for his recall a second time. I think we should all sign that. I'm making copies available at live events I go to. And you go to rescuecalifornia.org or text or email me. I'd be glad to send you a link that has the and it's hyperlinked to my email down below. I'll be glad to send you a package of information to hold him accountable for the waste and the problems in our state, particularly homelessness and as it affects real estate. What do you think? Am I being too harsh on the county? Am I being too harsh on the city? Too harsh on California? Let's see your comments. Like this, don't like this, subscribe, send me a comment. As always, I'm at Bill Gross Probate on social media. You can call, text, or email me. And as always, make today your best day ever. Thank you so much.